This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTSA studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who is the chief adult oncologist at the Yale Cancer Center. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on this station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center. Together, we will discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment available to people with cancer, and advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help by sharing a very up-to-date information and also to give you hope in the battle against cancer. We will answer your questions and give you the latest information that's available. If you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, you can email us at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call, and I'd ask you to write it down, 1-888-234-4YCC. And we'll try to answer your questions on the air today or in a future broadcast. If you're interested in listening to past editions of Healthline, or if you'd like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are posted in audio and written formats on the Yale Cancer Center website, which is yalecancercenter.org.
Today, our program focuses on cancer drug development and the process used to develop new therapies for the treatment of cancer. Our special guest is Dr. Mario Snowell, who is Associate Professor of Medical Oncology, Vice Chief of Medical Oncology, and Director of the Melanoma Program at the Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Snowell is one of the leading experts in the process of cancer drug development and the former head of the Biologics Evaluation Section of the Investigational Drug Branch at the National Cancer Institute. And prior to coming to the Yale Cancer Center, Dr. Snowell was the Vice President of Clinical Affairs for Vion Pharmaceuticals. Mario, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Thank you, Ed.
Mario, just to start out, can you give us an overview of the process involved in drug development?
Sure, Ken. It's a long process. You usually start out with a compound that has shown some activity against cancer, either in cell lines or in animal models. Then there's a fair amount of chemistry that's done around that compound to give it the appropriate pharmaceutical properties. There's a process involved in assessing the toxicity of that agent in animals. And finally, clinical trials. And the clinical trials process is actually quite long. It starts out with trying to determine the right dose and schedule of the drug in early trials, then looking for biological activity in intermediate stage trials, and finally, randomized studies that try and determine whether the compound has benefit for patients.
So in general, how long does it take for a drug to go from, say, you know, an idea, go through the laboratory studies, and then eventually go into humans?
I'd say it probably takes 7 to 10 years, and in some cases even longer.
And clearly that obviously requires a great deal of resources and a great deal of effort on a number of different levels. And so I think, you know, to the our listening audience, I think a lot of people feel that this is a very simple process. And people always kind of question, why doesn't this happen at a much faster rate? Why don't we have more drugs available?
Well, it's a very complex process, and we're still, even when we have an agent that shows activity against cancer in animals, it doesn't always show activity in cancer in humans. Not only that, if it shows activity against a cancer in animal models, we're never really quite sure which cancer, because there are many cancers, which cancer it will be active in humans. So the process and the cost of the process involves all the preclinical development and the enormous cost of doing hundreds, maybe thousands of patients in clinical trials. And you have to take into account into that process all the drugs that fail. So for every drug that succeeds in cancer, there might be several that actually fail.
Mari, I wanted to ask you, since you've been involved in drug development for a long time, what inspires someone who's an investigator about looking at a certain drug, and how was that different, let's say 20 years from now, when you first started at the NIH compared to now? How are these discoveries and sort of sparks being lit?
Well, I think the driving force today is the enormous increase in the understanding of biology of cancer, generated, for example, by scientists at Yale and at other major institutions. Some of that science is ongoing at pharmaceutical companies. Previously, 20 years ago, drugs were screened against cell lines. We didn't actually know exactly how they worked. We just knew that they killed cancer cells in a test tube. Now drug development is much more focused on drugs against specific targets which have been identified, understanding the molecular biology of cancer, that target specific to the biology of that cancer.
And I think, wouldn't you say, Mario, that I think what really has changed pretty dramatically over the last 15 or 20 years is our understanding of what makes cancer cells grow and proliferate. As compared to, you know, my parents, both of whom are cancer pharmacologists, cancer researchers, who started here at Yale many moons ago, you know, 50 years ago, they just had a very simplistic view of the processes that led to the growth of cancer cells.
The advances have been enormous. The pathways, the abnormal pathways that are activated in cancer cells, many have been identified. And so we know, as you point out, a great deal more than we knew 20 years ago. But my guess is that in 20 years, at the same kind of a talk show, they'll be saying how primitive we are today,
right,
in terms of our understanding.
Well, and I have to say, I hope that happens, that, you know, that 20 years from now we'll have such great advances.
Maybe one thing for our listeners to just be aware of was that the very first cancer patient that was treated with the drug was in fact here at the Yale Cancer Center, Yale New Haven Hospital, in 1942. And really, we take great pride in, I think, stating that the birthplace of cancer pharmacology and cancer drug development really has its roots here at the Yale Cancer Center in the 1940s and 1950s.
And that's absolutely true.
Mario, can you give us an example of targeted therapies, you know, in a sense, maybe choosing one drug from the bench to the bedside?
Well, when I say targeted therapy, I want you to understand that even the old drugs are targeted, except we didn't understand what those targets were. The newer targets, though, are specific to the biology of cancer. So, for example, one drug could be Herceptin or trastuzumab, which is an antibody directed against a cell surface molecule on breast cancer cells. It's only expressed by about a third of patients with breast cancer. The antibody causes tumors to regress in patients whose tumors overexpress this protein on the surface. It works together in combination with chemotherapy, and now we have data that it markedly prolongs the time to relapse in patients in the adjuvant setting, which means after surgery and all disease has been resected. It's just one of several examples of drugs out there. We could list several others that have been targeted to specific cancer pathways that are actually now approved. In fact, two of the most recent approvals involve two drugs in patients with kidney cancers, patients that I treat myself. One is called sunitinib and one is called sorafenib.
What role does the government play in this entire process?
Well, for many years, the government was a key driver of drug development in cancer. In fact, I think one of the reasons why the government was so involved is because the industry did not focus in this area. You can consider the National Cancer Institute to be almost a fully integrated drug development company. They have a preclinical discovery program, they have a drug development process, and they even have a group that develops drugs very much like a company develops drugs. But in addition to that, they also fund cancer centers like ours to do basic drug discoveries. They fund clinical trials. And, of course, if you consider the FDA, which it is part of the government, they also regulate the process of drug development.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and please stay tuned to learn more information about the process of cancer drug development with Dr. Mario Schnall from the Yale Cancer Center.
It's estimated that over 2 million men in the U.S. are currently living with prostate cancer. 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Yet major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from the disease. New treatment options now provide hope for all men diagnosed with prostate cancer. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using 2 simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, prostate cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to experimental medicines, which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTAC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Hsu, and our guest, Dr. Mario Schnoll, who's Associate Professor of Medical Oncology at the Yale Cancer Center. Mario, I'd like to start out this second portion of the program by asking you to explain to us and to the listening audience, after a drug has been developed, what is a clinical trial?
Well, clinical trials it's a very structured and controlled process in which the administration of a drug is given in a very specific way to patients, and then data is collected to determine both the safety and activity of the drug in that patient. When a group of patients are treated, that data is collected and then ultimately reported. One clinical trial follows another. Usually clinical trials are built upon previous clinical trials that were done with the same drug.
So, Mario, one question that's always posed to me is, if you have 2 different drugs that are currently approved and on the market, why can't one simply just kind of combine the two together, mix and match, and then treat a patient?
Well, you can, except that there is usually no safety information about the combination of those 2 drugs in patients. And it could be that if you put them both together, gave them both together in the patient at their full doses, you might have excessive toxicity. So there needs to be an organized process of finding out what the right dose and schedule of that combination should be before you go ahead and give it to a patient on a standard basis.
So again, maybe not to get into the details, but again, in terms of clinical trials, as you say, there is a systematic approach. And maybe just in very broad brushstroke terms, describe to our listeners, you know, what phase 1 means, what a phase 2 study means, what a phase 3 study means.
Sure, and in this case, we'll refer primarily to the development of a single drug, although this could apply to combinations also. So for a single drug, the very first trial in man is designed to determine dose and schedule. It's called a phase 1. And generally, groups of patients are treated, each group receiving a higher dose of the drug until the maximum tolerated dose is achieved, until you find a dose which is safe in almost all the patients. You then move on to a phase 2 trial. In a phase 2 trial, you use a dose that you find in the phase 1 trial, treat a group of patients with a similar disease, for example, just in breast cancer or just in renal cell cancer or just in melanoma, to determine whether that dose and schedule of the drug does anything, has biological activity, and causes tumors to regress. But just because a tumor shrinks doesn't mean that you've benefited patients. So you then move on from a phase 2 trial into a phase 3 trial, which is usually a randomized study, in which you either add your drug to existing therapy or compare it to existing therapy. And your endpoints in those studies are whether you usually improve survival or relieve symptoms. Those are the endpoints which are used to get to submit a drug for approval to the FDA.
Why are clinical trials so important for our patients?
Well, without clinical trials, we wouldn't know how to use the drugs. We wouldn't know the right dose, the right schedule. We wouldn't even know if they benefit our patients. So it's very important to do clinical trials. Otherwise, doctors wouldn't have the information that they need to treat their patients.
I mean, it sounds like in some circumstances, being on a clinical trial is individually helpful for one patient. But I guess in a sense, also globally, it adds to our body of information that we can use in treating other people as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't want anybody in the audience to think that when you're on a clinical trial, you get less than standard of care. In fact, my belief is that when you're on a clinical trial, you get at least the standard of care, and sometimes better.
In fact, I think our experience has been patients who go on clinical trials are so very carefully evaluated and monitored that my sense is that they probably get more intense scrutiny and better care.
They certainly get intense scrutiny. They're monitored very frequently for any evidence of activity and toxicity. And generally, when a patient is on a clinical trial, they're getting the very best available treatment at that point in time.
Mari, what are your thoughts to the comments that I think we all hear every once in a while from patients, you know, when we ask them to consider going on a clinical trial? Well, you know, doc, I don't want to be viewed as a guinea pig, right, because this is completely experimental and I want to get standard of care. What are your thoughts on that?
Clearly, clinical trials are investigational, but for example, in a randomized phase 3 clinical trial, so the last stage of clinical trials, it's usually this control arm. For example, if you were to be randomized to a control arm, you're getting the best standard of care, and the experimental arm would be the best standard of care plus something else, so you might actually even do better. We need to do the clinical trial because we don't know whether the new drug actually benefits or not. If you're on an earlier stage trial, it's probably because standard treatments have not worked. And so the clinical trial is actually offering an option for treatment that would otherwise not be available to that patient.
Mario, a question that sometimes, excuse me, people ask is about fast-track approval by the FDA. Can you say a little bit about that? Actually, what does that mean?
I'm not a great expert on this, but generally fast track is granted for drugs for unmet needs for which there is no good therapy. And fast track really helps at the very late stages of drug development when one is submitting all of the data for registration. So one is allowed to submit of the registration package. You can have a rolling admission, so not all of the information needs to be in at the same time. The FDA also commits to give you a full review within a certain period of time. So it is helpful, but it's generally interpreted to mean more than it really does in the overall process of drug development.
Another question I want to ask, too, a lot of us really wonder about the cost of these drugs. Some of them are really incredibly expensive. Why are these medications so costly?
Well, it's very expensive just to get two clinical trials. So the whole preclinical process is a very expensive process. Each patient on a clinical trial, the cost to a company to put that patient on the trial, the cost to the academic institution, all is enormous. It's on the order, can be on the order of somewhere between $10,000 to $50,000 per patient. And when you think that thousands of patients are needed between first in man to approval, that could cost $70, $80, $100 million from initial concept all the way to drug approval. And when you multiply that by the number of drugs that got that far and didn't make it, the cost is enormous.
Actually, maybe that in follow-up to that, just give an idea as to what are the chances of a drug that gets into man, right, at the phase one level and then eventually gets approved and then is used on a daily basis.
I don't have those exact numbers with me, but that number is very low. It's in the, I would say in cancer, maybe 9 out of 10 drugs that actually get to phase one trials probably ultimately don't make it all the way to registration.
Right.
It may be better in other diseases, but in cancer, because we're just not so good yet at picking out the ones that are going to be active or go all the way to registration versus those that fail, the failure rate is quite high.
So the important, I think, point to emphasize is probably, you know, less than 10% of the drugs that initially enter clinical studies eventually get approved. Yet if you think about it, right, there were already a large number of drugs that were being tested in the laboratory that never even made it to man.
That funnel is very broad at the beginning and narrows very, very quickly. Not very quickly, actually not quickly enough, because obviously we have a lot of failures. And if you've gotten to a phase 3 trial and failed, you can imagine the enormous cost to get there.
Mario, we had an email question from Joanne, who lives in Wethersfield, and I think this is a perfect one to pose to you. She says, is the drug sunitinib a good option for a patient, and she's referring to an uncle who has renal cell cancer, and is the drug available?
Yes, the drug was approved earlier this year. It is a good option for treatment of patients with renal cell cancer. It's a targeted agent that blocks the growth of new blood vessels. It actually has a very impressive activity. In fact, a randomized phase 3 clinical trial was just recently presented at the national cancer meetings, showing that this drug more than doubles the time to progression. So if a patient has cancer, it doubles the amount of time before their tumor actually starts to grow.
So an important point actually to emphasize is that sunitinib, which is made by Pfizer, this is not a paid advertisement by any stretch, but sunitinib was in fact developed by Yossi Schlesinger, who is chairman of pharmacology here at the Yale Cancer Center and really one of the pioneers in the whole area of signal transduction and targeted therapies.
That is correct. That's correct.
And in fact, Mario, your own lab group is trying to build on sunitinib and add other targeted therapies to see whether or not you can even improve the activity of sunitinib even more so.
Well, that's correct, Ed. Actually, the idea for the current phase one clinical trial that we're doing actually comes from our former colleague, Dr. Murren. And it's a combination of sunitinib with a drug called sirolimus. And it's a combined approach to target different pathways that are active in blood vessels and in cancer. We've just started that clinical trial. We're very excited, at least. It's too early to have results, but we're very excited about the combination.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We'd like to take a short break to listen to a survivor story. Please stay tuned to learn more about clinical trials with Dr. Mario Schnall from the Yale Cancer Center.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's a story of a hero from Hamden.
10 years ago, when I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia, there was no cure. After teaching math for 35 years, I was forced to retire. Dr. Tom Duffy at the Yale Cancer Center told me about a new procedure called a mini stem cell transplant. He encouraged me to put my life in the hands of Dr. Stuart Seropian, one of the few doctors in the country doing this procedure. On January 17, 2004, I had a stem cell transplant at the Yale Cancer Center. At age 70, I feel like a new man. I owe a great debt of gratitude to my anonymous stem cell donor and to the terrific staff at the Yale Cancer Center. They literally saved my life.
This survivor story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Healthline, this is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. Mario Schnoll from the Yale Cancer Center. And we're reviewing the process of cancer drug development and clinical trials. Mario, I just wanted to start this third segment of the program by asking, I've had a chance to listen to some of these new developments that you've been talking about. What's it like for you as an oncologist now as opposed to when you started your career because of these new advances?
I have to say it gets more and more exciting every day. The enormous amount of biology that's being discovered, not just drugs that are targeted to cancer pathways, but in my own area, which is cancer immunology, every day we're learning more and more about how to effectively treat cancer, activate the immune system. The number of drugs that are available increase almost by the day. It's incredibly invigorating, I guess, exciting.
So, Mara, you were in your former life, were at the NCI. And then most recently, you were at Vion Pharmaceuticals, which is actually, in fact, a drug development company, which works very closely with scientists here at Yale, and then came on board here at the Yale Cancer Center about 2 years ago. So what made you decide to make that switch from the biopharmaceutical company back into the academic world?
I believe it's very exciting to work at a biopharmaceutical company, and the projects that were ongoing at Vion were quite interesting. Vion was at a stage where it was moving towards late-stage development and very focused on one or two products, whereas in an academic environment, one can have access to and work with many, many different compounds targeted at many, many different targets. And also the strength of the basic science at Yale attracted me because there's the opportunity to translate some of these basic science discoveries into clinical application. So for all those reasons, I thought Yale was the right place for me.
And in fact, if you look at our own drug discovery, drug development pipeline, there really is a wealth of small molecules and immunologic agents that our hope is over the next 3 to 5 years, we may be able to bring as many as 10 to 15 new molecules into the clinic, which actually is really quite remarkable when you think about it, right? Because most drug companies have at most only maybe one or two.
I agree with you, and there are quite a number of opportunities. I think we need to be careful in that the process of going from a molecule in the lab, as we talked about, to the clinic does take some time. But there's also the opportunity to use the science that's there to learn how to, for example, combine drugs that are already in the clinic and take those forward. And then as new discoveries come up and new molecules come up, obviously we're positioned to best investigate them in the clinic.
Murray, I wanted to ask you, you're involved in drug development and also you're a clinical researcher. What are some of the projects that you're working on now and that you're very excited about and that would you might share with our listening audience?
Well, we have, as you know, I deal specifically with melanoma and renal cell carcinoma patients, and we have some very interesting new drugs, immunologic drugs that we're testing in those patients. But also, more recently, we've organized ourselves into a phase one unit in which we will be able to offer either first-in-man or new combinations of agents to patients that have no other treatment alternatives available. We're just beginning to build that program, and our hope is that we'll probably have 8 to 10 of those novel trials available at any one time to offer to advanced cancer patients.
And again, and I think the hope of this phase one unit is to be a resource not only for the Yale Medical Center, but really throughout the state of Connecticut.
That's correct, and there are several of us, as you know, that are working on this, including Dr. Kevin Kelly and Dr. James Lee. In fact, Dr. James Lee will take a very prominent role in terms of helping to organize that unit.
How can a patient, a person with cancer, access some of these cutting-edge trials and cutting-edge care at this time in Connecticut and elsewhere?
Well, certainly there is a... there are over 50 trials currently open at Yale. We have a website which lists many of those studies. And in addition, patients can go to the Cancer Information Service and see all the clinical trials that are available in general around the country.
And again, for those patients who are interested in seeing what the clinical trials available here at the Yale Cancer Center, you can go to the website, yalecancercenter.org.
Well, before we sign off, Murray, I wanted to ask you, can you review for our listening audience two or three key messages that you'd like them to know and to hear today?
Well, first of all, I the hope that's out there, I think, is incredible. I mean, we still have a long way to go, but there are enormous advances in biology. It's important to support research because that's the way we discover new targets. It's important to support clinical trials, and it's important for patients to consider clinical trials as perhaps the best care that they might get. There are patients who we put on clinical trials who have had wonderful responses when they've had already exhausted all other forms of therapy. So I think patients should, one, support research, tell the government that research is important for cancer, and also support clinical trials and consider clinical trials for themselves if the time comes.
Well, again, if you have questions for Dr. Mario Schnall or for Healthline, we encourage you to go to our website, which is yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the resources available to you. We want to thank Dr. Mario Schnall for joining us today on Healthline.
Yeah, Mario, terrific session as always. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will focus on the detection and treatment of thyroid cancer, and our special guest will be Dr. Robert Udelsman, professor and chairman of the Department of Surgery at Yale. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.